And welcome once again to the Agile Revolution podcast. This is Craig.
Hi, Renee's here.
And Tony.
And welcome along for this. We decided to move from the cafe to the cafeteria for this episode of the podcast.
This one has a door on it though, so it sort of cuts a little bit down on the ambient noise.
Why, Craig?
Why did we move to a cafeteria?
That's where I booked it.
Because that's where we booked the room.
I think it was more because Renee told us we had to.
No.
Well, Renee tells us what we have to do all the time, so it makes that any different.
I just done it because Renee says.
Pretty much.
I have to.
She says talk and we do for 40 minutes and then we
go home and make pikelets.
Geez, I wish there was an edit button on this podcast sometimes. Right. Folks, if you have any illusion that we edit this, the last 2 minutes is testament to the fact that we don't.
There's no edit.
Anyway, what do we see happening around the world of Agile and related such things, Renee, anything?
Yeah, so I have a number of highlights from an article called The Cynical Agile Dictionary. I'm going to pronounce this name wrong, by Yuriz Zubarev.
Yes, that's exactly my link. You stole my link.
Yes!
Now the missing link.
So the link...
Where did you see that link?
Not from you. That's what you're hinting at. Not from you. Did you see it from me?
No, I didn't see it from you.
Okay, excellent. We don't read your tweets. Anyway, so the ones that I loved in particular,
right,
and you can highlight yours after I'm done, is story points, a relative measure.
Hang on, set the scene. What is this thing?
It's a cynical agile dictionary.
Right.
I said that.
I think the part before you go on, I think the part at the top, with just to set the scene, is very important. He says right at the top, his little story is, as a reader with a sense of humour, I want to find down-to-earth definitions so that I can smile, frown and reflect.
Yeah, these made me smile.
Yes, okay.
I didn't necessarily agree with them, but I thought they were...
Okay, so move forward.
Story points, a relative measure of absolute inability to estimate. So true.
I like it.
Do you want to do one?
Continuous integration, a good idea turned into a semi-automated continuous disaster.
Sprint.
Right.
An enchanted quest to collect magical story points.
Agile certification, a pilot license that both an eagle and an elephant can easily obtain.
Love that one.
You're going to burn in hell for that one, boy.
Agile manifesto, proof that principles are often mistaken for values or rules.
Wow, interesting.
Kanban, an example that anything sounds more legitimate if it's in Japanese.
Could have been exactly the same definition for Kaizen.
Kaizen, yes. Yeah. I think Kaizen says see Kanban.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Extreme programming, a methodology that was so extreme that it's not practiced anymore.
I can see Craig flinch then. That's why I really giggled.
TDD, an approach to build a car with 100 airbags and no engine.
I like that, yeah.
I'm done. Yep.
You're done.
So basically, it's worth a bit of a read of this blog post. It's got a whole bunch of ones we didn't read out there, but a whole bunch of different definitions. And I think what was more interesting to me for this one, I don't know whether you read this, Renee, was the myriad of comments that come.
No, I didn't.
When you post something like this,
okay.
Because everybody, and that's why I wanted to read that thing at the start, is that I read it, I had a bit of a chuckle. I think when I actually wrote the tweet for it, I kind of went. Some of these are just funny, and some of them are actually so close to the truth that we've got
it's
a lot of
scary.
Work,
yeah.
A lot of work as a community to do, because they are things like that. Like there's one, the story points one, for example. Right? The story points are a relative measure of absolute inability to estimate.
So true. Even the Agile Manifesto one was true. Proof that principles are often mistaken for rules.
Yeah, I really love that one. Right? So, and I think the other where's the where's the other one? The Agile Manifesto. You know, license for avoiding documentation and not having a plan, right? Which is how most people really read the manifesto. But if you read through the comments, there's the usual bunch of people that kind of go, "Woo, somebody finally gets it," you know. Yeah. And obviously, he was trying to make a point. And then the people that are, you know, like, "Oh, you've never done it, dude. You don't understand Agile.
You haven't done Agile properly."
Yeah, and all the way through through the comments is those types of things. I think sometimes we do need to stop and take a bit of a giggle at ourselves because
seriously. Or not seriously.
No, well, I think sometimes, we take ourselves too seriously.
Exactly right.
But
I mean, it's not rocket science here, people. You know, it's not world-changing. As much as you like to think about it, it's not.
And the interesting thing is that it's really hit home to me. Literally 20 minutes ago, I was just in a session with a bunch of folks, coaching session, and they were showing me their story wall. It's for a project that... It's a little bit different. It's not very easily estimatable because it's a lot of problem solving.
And are you sitting on my project, are you?
Yeah, something like that. And
I thought it was on mine.
And these guys are around the story wall and they're like, "Oh, but you know, we've got to get the story points right. We've got to get the cards broken down. We don't know what to do." And you know, it's kind of like, guys, you just whatever you do, you're going to not do it anyway. I said, what's the first way you tackle this problem? And then they all started lit up. "Oh, well, we're going to do this, this, and this." And I went, "Well, let's just write a couple of cards for that and go do it." It was like this brainwave moment. It's like, "Oh, but that's not what we do to set up a project."
What do you mean? We could start delivering right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would we do that?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we plan that for the next 2 years?
That's waterfall.
Oh, nasty.
Anywho, go and have a read of the dictionary, and if you got ones that perhaps you like or perhaps you want to point out, drop us a line and we'll add them to the list.
Beautiful. You'd be looking at my shoulder.
I was looking at those really great pictures that you got on your iPad.
It's awesome. It is really awesome. It's an interesting post on Twitter. It's from I Am Ruinous. It's called "I'll Show You My Facilitator's Toolkit If You Show Me Yours."
So now that I know he's got that, I've got my own little...
I know. I have to say, I always thought... You've seen my little toolkit, and I always thought that was pretty well organised, but this puts me to shame, seriously.
Just as a side note for listeners, my mum made me my toolkit bag...
Very pretty.
...in Japanese print, because she knows I like Japanese print stuff, and she made it in waterproof material so my cards stay nice and dry as I walk between buildings. That's
so
sad.
I guess just for people who are trying to, you know, your coach's toolkit. So it's a little zip up bag. It looks a bit like a toiletry bag, but it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
And in there, it certainly holds the large size cards quite nicely. A whole bunch of pens,
post-it notes, pens.
And Tony, yours is an industrial strength.
Industrial strength.
Nuclear war wouldn't destroy it.
big silver
case.
Photography camera box, right?
That's right. Yeah. Where I ripped the bits and pieces out of it, made it look all right. Although somebody keeps telling me it's a cosmetic case, but I'm going to ignore that.
Ooh, I didn't think of that one.
I mean, this guy's gone to the next level. I got to say, I'm ruined.
It makes my little calico bag that I got from a conference once pretty bad. But anyway,
seriously, and I can fit a fair bit of stuff into there, as you've seen, because you two have actually borrowed mine many times, right?
I wouldn't be caught dead walking around with your cosmetics case.
Good on you. It's like the toiletry bag. Anyway, this guy has got it sorted out. Now, this looks like a full strength industrial toolbox.
Yeah, it's a proper toolkit. Yeah?
The stuff that he's got in. Okay, so let's just go through it just quickly, right? He's got markers.
Many
different colours, whiteboard markers, because we don't want those permanent things, right? Enough Sharpies. Coaches, we can never have enough Sharpies.
Yep.
And that's because coaches steal them from you.
From each other, even.
I think I've stolen some of yours. Oh yes, you have. I think there's three things that the agile community have kept in play: the index card business, the post-it note business, and Sharpie.
Absolutely.
I think the post-it note business was going fine by itself, by the way.
Well, I think we've just helped it along.
And let me give you a little note. We gave it an extra shove because when we went to India to do the coaching, they'd never seen postal notes. So when I gave them these postal notes, they were so impressed by them. So I know they're going to go and buy them because they just don't have them. But there's not something that they have over there.
You should have opened a little outlet while you're there.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, tonyspostalnotes.co.in.
There's a lean startup for me. Righto, planning poker, the obligatory video.
Yep. Oh, is that
video?
Not the cards?
That's a card.
Video or the cards?
Yeah, it's
a card. So he did have a video.
So far, by the way, it's got everything that my box has got in it.
Yes. That one just went straight through to the catcher or the keeper, whichever country it is in. painter's tape.
Blue, no less.
Painter's
tape,
blue, yes.
And the reason, guys, listening, blue painter's tape.
There we go.
Is that it lasts longer on the walls without peeling off, so it is effectively damages your walls less.
Right.
Hate you guys.
Post-it notes.
Welcome back, everybody.
Post-it notes. Now, this is an interesting one. Poker chips.
I don't have that.
Mm. I have about three.
Yeah.
What? What for?
So if you're doing value type stuff, you can give people poker chips and they can bet on the value of the things that they want. You give them a certain amount of poker chips and...
I love what he says he uses them for. Useful coin games, placeholders, other creative ideas. I use these a lot to play simple coin puzzles while waiting for everyone to show up to the meetings.
See, I use post-it notes to make origami cranes.
Cool. And I can say testament to that because when I first met Renee, I actually walked into her project room, which was in another country, and all I did was walk in here, and there was about, I would say, at least 180 origami cranes lying around the place.
I make a difference, Craig.
And I said... Renee was your coach, and they went, how did you know?
Don't mess with Renee, she'll fudge up the paper plane and throw you away. Okay, so far, I'm with him. Then he's got drafting dots. So you know,
yeah, I agree.
Dots,
yep.
Yeah, that's really
good. For voting, yep.
Yeah.
Or not even for voting, for putting on cards if they carry over so that you indicate that it's happening too often.
Six-sided dice.
So I have that on my phone.
Yeah. Righto. So that looks really good. But then we really get into it. He's got star post-its as well.
Wow, that's going.
That's really
above
going
and beyond. Yeah.
There's a few more pictures here. Scotch tape.
Mm-hmm.
Happy face stickers. Yep.
Got to keep the teacher's pets happy. A multitude of different coloured posties to go as well.
Yep.
Paper clips.
Yep.
My gosh, foam sticky shapes to unleash the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Pipe cleaners.
Well, you got the agile pipe cleaner game.
Or when your ears
game.
Dirty.
When your ears dirty, yeah. But rubber bands. Now, seriously, that's pretty full on, but then he lists the bonus material.
Okay.
So we get into the bonus material.
He's got scissors, right?
Pencil box with scissors, staples, pens, yeah.
Okay, so these are things he doesn't normally include in his kit.
A bucket of tennis balls.
Yep.
Really? You carry a bucket of tennis balls?
but there's a bucket of tennis balls nearby for when I do want to play.
And a miscellaneous set of games. I just think applause is needed there because that's amazingly.
The thing is, though, that he needs a ute to carry around the toolbox in him.
Oh, yes. So, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty good.
Excellent.
Anyway, just a little bit of fun and games there. And if nothing else, the listeners got to hear the fact that you own a toiletry bag and you make origami.
Next. you remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about the top 20 most influential people in Agile?
Yep.
Well, a bit of a storm happened out of that InfoQ article, and there was a bit of disagreement going on backwards and forwards in the community. So Mark Levison, who's... an Agile fellow from Canada, decided that he was going to set up what he called the 100 Agile Voices We Should Hear More From.
Mm.
So this was kind of in response, and basically saying, look, you know, we always get these 100 or 200 lists, which, to be honest with you, you know, you can argue their validity, but, you know, sometimes I think they're better for the things that the people you don't know or the people that you've forgotten about or that book that you remember hearing about 3 years ago that you go, maybe I should go and read that if it's in the top 100. Maybe it's a little more valid than it was. The thing is that all of those people he deems as being heroes, like, and potentially, you know, they're seen as their ideas are more important than others. But, you know, as we know, there's lots of, you know, influential people in the community that perhaps we don't get to talk about.
It's the community that makes the difference.
That's exactly right. So what he's asking people to do is to help the community help him create a list of voices we should hear more from, right? And these are the people that haven't written a book, the people that, you know, perhaps, you know, aren't as well known in the community. So he's looking to find about 100 people, and in order to nominate somebody for the list, they have to have a track record of doing something agile for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be in the top 100 of any previous list. He's not going to use any algorithms, so... essentially, it's based on people's perception. He wants people who write about their experiences, good or bad. You can't nominate yourself, and you have to have a reason. So, in other words, if you just sort of say, "Hey, I'm going to nominate Joe Bloggs because he's a good guy," then, you know, he's not going to make it on the list. So what he's asking you to do is to reply to the blog comment and basically tell him who they are and why they're interesting, link to their blog and link to their Twitter. And
what's the address to the blog?
The blog is agilepainrelief.com.
Okay.
And that's the notes from a tool user blog. So we'll put a link in the notes. But I noticed that Craig Brown from Australia here has added a list of people, including our very own Renee.
Yeah, I noticed that last night.
So I noticed that because I went to go and add Renee and went, well, nuts to her. She's already been nominated.
But then you scroll down and...
Scroll down. I'll scroll later.
That was just engaging.
I nominated Craig last night.
Oh, did you?
Oh, woot. Must have been after I went on there to look nominating you.
You'd have nominated.
Anyway, the Australians, besides Renee and I, but people like Rowan Bunning and Kane Maher, who certainly have done some stuff. Mm-hmm. Jeff Burns from the ACS. Know of Jeff, but certainly has done some work on that side of the fence. Ed Wong from the Project Little Helper blog. He's done a bit of work, particularly with some of the more conferences at the Roots. Jason Yip. Of course, from ThoughtWorks, so definitely add him to the list. Mm-hmm. Although Mark sort of came back and said, "Look, I'm not entirely sure I do that." He has at least 10,000 followers. I'm not sure he's entirely.
Yeah, but that's a weird thing because I was reading a post the other day about how boffy being the technical term, clout is as a determinant of influence. Because in reality, you could quite easily boost your own score just by following 10,000 people and then unfollowing them because the normal social reaction, someone's following me, I better follow them back,
yes.
Yeah.
I don't buy into that rubbish, by the way.
No. Yeah, it's more about the quality and the quantity. So Jason Yip, David Joyce, and a couple other names. So anyway, I guess the point was I just want to put that out there because I think it's good sometimes for those unsung heroes to kind of be heard from. So if you know somebody that you work with or someone's helped you out, then add them to the list.
And Tony's looking a bit sad faced now.
Was I?
No.
You know me. I don't really care what anyone thinks.
So
when I start worrying about what other people start thinking, then I become one of those also-rans. Anyway, continue on.
So a post back from February, I sort of had it in my list of things that I wanted to comment on for a while, was called The Agile Project Manager Getting Out of Jail Free, from www.projecttimes.com on behalf of Robert Galen. And basically, he starts the article saying with a student asking the class, if within a sprint the team can't seem to get the work that they plan done, don't you simply just put it back into the backlog for the execution of the next sprint?
Oh, yes, I saw this. Yes.
Why not?
So what is your answer, Tony?
It needs to be prioritised like everything else. Before I even throw it back into the backlog, your customer needs to have comment on it.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't do that.
Yep. Yeah? So
you've got to match it against the value.
So just because it is in your current backlog doesn't mean it's necessarily as important enough to continue to be in your backlog.
Absolutely
for the next
correct.
Craig?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of things that I think this discussion was ensuing. So, one of the things I do often see is people start something and they go a certain amount through and they get blocked by something. And then the question is, do you throw that back into the backlog? And then the question I sometimes have is, well, how much have we actually expended and are we putting it back in the backlog just because we don't want to fix the problem, don't remove the blockage?
Or why was it stopped in the first place?
That's right. So, what was the blockage that stopped the...
Yes.
And did we really fix it? So I've got a problem when we do that type of work, unless the blockage is actually, there's not going to be... It's eroded the value of us actually doing the thing in the first place. So I come back to it, it's about the value.
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me is that if it does get thrown back into the backlog, like it is deemed to go back into the backlog, I like to mark them up so that you can see that it's actually traversed a cycle.
So it's bounced.
It's bounced. Because if it's bounced more than once, then you really have to ask the question, is it really worth that much?
So
What's the value?
The author of the article does talk about going back to the product owner and determining just where it fits in again and if it really does need to be done, and then obviously reprioritising.
Mm-hmm.
But it does beg the question, is a sprint a commitment? So a lot of people, there's been a lot of talk about recently about what is a time box and is there commitment or not. I know that the recent definition in the Scrum rule book is that it's removed the wording of it being a commitment. What are your thoughts on that? So what's a time box to you?
It's a little box that you put time in. You knew I was going to give you a smart answer, didn't you? You really did.
Do you want to give a real answer now?
I do want to give a real answer. I mean, for me, with a time box, it's got to be very important for me is that you set an actual goal around what you intend to achieve and when you intend to achieve that.
So what's the goal?
So the goal may be we're going to do these amount of stories by that amount of time.
Okay.
Right?
So is it a commitment or it's just a goal?
For me, it's a goal. Commitment thing has always bothered me because you're dealing with that grey. Right, and especially when you get new teams together, they have a hard time actually measuring how much they can do in a certain period of time. As teams have been around together, you know, you get a team that's been doing this for 18 months, they're going to be very good at that, and they probably will hit, it becomes a commitment, because they know what they can do.
So do you think it's fair for a customer to say to a customer, look, we don't know if we're going to make it or not, but this is our goal? Do you think a customer will react okay with it?
I think the point there that's being missed is if the customer is involved in the setting of the goal and understands the intrinsic points of view and what you're attempting to do, then most times they accept that quite well.
So where this has gone wry is where customers haven't been educated and part of the team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where they're not part of the team. Yeah. That's the important thing for me. Because when they actually have the... And again, it goes back to that whole wisdom of the crowd and it goes back to that collaboration that we talk about all the time. If you've got this product owner sitting out there and they're not part of the group or they're not part of that whole planning phase and working through the process, then they don't understand quite often. Of course they react. I'd react if somebody just came in and said, well, it's just blah, blah, blah. I don't understand all the backlog to it.
Yeah. Craig, your thoughts?
I think the other thing with to go back to your commitment question is... Which teams often struggle when they get together about, you know, creating that original velocity. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing Iffy of Agile or Kanban.
Absolutely.
There's still some velocity that you're trying to hit,
yeah.
The cycle time or points or whatever that might be. And after a couple of iterations or after a few weeks or whatever, you get that, you kind of hit that rhythm. And I think what we see quite often happen is product owners and project managers particularly start looking at the reality. Right, so if I use the, you know, the story points example, you know, we thought we were going to get 50. The team really needs to be hitting 80. We're only doing 40. Work harder, you know, and cracking
the whip. Work faster. Work harder. Work faster.
And we spend a lot of time as coaches saying to people, look, it's, you know, we've got to really look at what's really telling us. But I think sometimes, and I had to remind myself of this just recently, is that, you know, we've also got to make sure the teams aren't settling. So that they're as part of the continuous improvement, that you know, retrospective is also looking at and saying, well, what can we do differently to try and make 60 mm-hmm. points, as opposed to just arguing back and going, no, we're stuck at 40, or you know, we'll work harder.
So reducing the water, basically. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that to me, I think, is something that teams, you know, quite often don't do enough of. It's that they either are spending too much of their time and energy arguing about why they can't make something, or they're, you know, working ridiculous overtime in order to make something they're never going to make in the first place, as opposed to, you know, stopping, slowing down, taking a look and improving.
And that's not trying to break the sustainable pace at all, is it?
No, well, that's exactly about keeping sustainable pace, but it's about, you know, not just settling.
And I
guess that the reason I started thinking about this was that teams that are constantly, like, I used to think it was probably a good idea that if you get a team and they were constantly doing 40, 40, 40 points every iteration, that's a good thing. And in fact, that is. But then you want to say to guys, well,
how can
okay,
you take it to the next level?
How could you get to 45? How could you get to 50? What could we do differently?
Good is the enemy of great, right? You've got to try and stress the system just that little bit extra every time. And I think, though, Craig, there's a balance there too. When you try to push them to the next level, that you've got to be careful that they don't try to set unrealistic goals as well and then set themselves up for failure, because that damages them.
Yeah.
So it's about just saying, all right, so we did 40 this time, let's just push it that little bastion of, you know, 45 or whatever it be next time, one more story than we thought we could do.
Yeah.
And then really celebrate it too, to say, hey, we did it.
Stretch goal. Yep. Though I believe stretch goals are bad these days, but anyway. The thing
I need the words, Renee. The actual stuff that goes behind it's just got new names.
Yes. What I did like about this particular article was the analogy back to the get out of jail free, the Monopoly analogy. And think about it like a game of Monopoly. Sometimes you land on the chance card. sometimes there are just things that you can't predict will happen, and so commitment is really difficult when the chance card comes up.
And sometimes you make your own rules and collect money when you land on free parking.
That's right.
Okay.
Or in my chair, Jen, you always end up on either go to jail or you land on Mayfair and somebody whops you. But anyway, keep going.
So there's been a lot of recent talk as well from Tobias Meyer about time box not equaling commitment, and there was a lot of back and forth and apparently created a bit of Twitter momentum. But I think, you know, effectively what we've talked about today has really covered what was in the newer articles anyway.
Indeed. Anything else, Tony?
Mailbag.
Mailbag. All
mailbag.
Right. So just one last little thing, just as a shorts before we go to the mailbag, and then we'll have a quick look at our feature. And apologies to anyone who's not in the Australian New Zealand region, but just a bit of a reminder: we've got, you know, a couple of events coming up in the next few months. So Agile Australia, if you haven't booked in for that in Melbourne at the end of May, so that's only about 4 weeks away. So there's over 500 people already committed to going to that.
500,
so
okay.
Heading towards 600, I believe. So if you want to see the who's who in the Australian Agile community, you haven't sorted that out, so it's a good place to get to, and lots of interesting talks happening. And the other one that's just interesting that I've seen just pop up recently is more of a grassroots, which is the LAST conference.
Yep.
Which is also happening in Melbourne on the 27th of July. It's a one day, very cost effective entrance fee to get into that, but more of a open space grassroots type conference. So try and get either or both of those onto your diary and get along, and we'll be at one or both of those, so we'll obviously there.
And I'd add the third one is the World BA Conference, which is hitting town in June 18th, 19th in Melbourne, and then it's in Sydney and it's in Perth. And a lot of the Agile and Lean speakers are appearing at those ones as well, so they're well worth getting along. One of us will be there as well.
Very good. Mailbag.
Mailbag. Dear the Agile Revolution, firstly, I love the podcast and the format.
Love Renee.
And Quinton.
And Craig and Tony, you will do as you're told. You will love it as well. Anyway, we got mail from Justin Hennessy, the software development manager, and you probably remember we actually reviewed some of his...
His Scrum Alliance article a couple of podcasts ago.
Yeah, so he said, you reviewed an article I'd published on the Scrum Alliance site. Thanks, grin. And Renee had a couple of questions. So unlike Renee, I would like to answer them.
You ready for it, Justin?
I hope I do a good impression of you, Justin. How does the tree relate to values and practices? Sure. The high-performance tree is a metaphor for conveying to a team what grows from having good roots, i.e. the values you see at the bottom of the trunk. The leaves of the tree are some of the things a team will experience on the path to high performance. The fruit is where we as coaches are trying to guide them towards, e.g. astonishing results, and ultimately a team that can do anything. This exercise doesn't have much to do with the practices, so would need to be used alongside some other exercise. My experience is the high performance tree comes in once a team has a handle on the basic practices. Comments, guys?
Sounds good.
Yeah, anything you can do to visualise that and open up the discussion is great. That's what we talked about, and I think that that validates, I guess, the process that they went through.
Excellent. Comment two. Has there been any tangible direct action? Really sounds like a Renee question, doesn't it?
Always a Renee question.
Yeah.
Why are we here? What are we doing?
What's the value?
I'm so feeling the love.
You know the old story. If your friends are taking the pee out of you, then they really do love you, Renee.
Okay.
I can honestly say there's been great improvement within the team, but I don't think it was just the reset. One of the reasons that triggered the reset, another question I think Renee asked, was we had a few team members come on board and it felt like the right time to go over basics. As I articulated in my article, the team were doing practices of Scrum but did not perhaps understand the underlying values of which they were doing them. So, questions, answers?
Yeah, I mean, I think really what this letter tells us is that you don't ask enough questions.
Seriously, and you were giving us a hard time. You're just giving yourself a hiding, really.
Really?
For those of you that could see Craig, he's just got
shaking his head.
Right. Okay. So, thanks again for the review. Keep up the great work. Yours sincerely, Justin Hennessy, software development.
So, I've been speaking to Justin since that article as well, and we're going to get him on in a podcast in the near future and hear some of his thoughts. He's a few interesting things going on. So. Excellent.
And we do encourage anybody to send us mail. We will read it out. We will
when we check the mailbox.
Well, somebody checks the mailbox.
I check the mailbox too. Thank you.
Okay.
We don't read out all the email about boner pills and all like that.
That's right.
All Viagra emails.
All those extensions and stuff, yeah. All right, Craig.
All right, let's go to our feature. So the feature is I've been doing a little bit of reading around some recent articles by Steve Denning. So if you don't know Steve Denning, quite well known in the management sphere, written a bunch of books. Most recent one is one called Radical Management. Quite well known for a lot of his talk, particularly about things about delighting your customers. So if you haven't sort of read any of his stuff, then put it on your to-read list. So he kicked off a bunch of articles just recently on Forbes, and the first one was The Best-Kept Management Secret on the Planet, Agile. So what he's really trying to get at, it's an interesting article. He gives a bunch of examples at the start of the article about how people that came up with bold new ideas essentially weren't taken seriously because the ideas came from the...
Left field. They came from people outside of areas that are their sphere of influence, basically.
So what he's saying with Agile is it's the same thing, is that... in management, we've had this ongoing problem that trying to balance disciplined execution with continuous innovation. And I like his quote, disciplined execution crushes innovation, and innovation by its nature is undisciplined. This seems like an insoluble problem. And what he's then arguing is that there's a bunch of people over here that no one's really heard of, the geeks, and they've got this thing called Agile, which seems to fix these problems. But his article goes on to say is that these guys aren't the right people, so therefore management has really largely ignored the ignored this because what would the software developers say?
Do you think that's the case though?
I think there's, so if you read further down his article, I mean, he talks about if you think about the world of management and where it's evolved to, the amount of mentions that Agile gets is actually very limited. Like he said, besides his book, which obviously he does mentions it, but he says, look, you scan the pages of Harvard Business Review, very rarely see a reference to Agile, and if so, it's a one or two word link there to something that someone's doing.
But what's the root cause of this? Is it that people don't know that it exists, or they don't have time to look at what new fads are out there, or?
I think it's more the denial. Like, how could this possibly work? These guys are a bunch of geeks. How could they possibly solve this problem? That's really the point of his.
The point of his article, is that what you think, though?
I think the point is, and if you go back to the title, which is The Best Kept Management Secret on the Planet, is that it's there, it's something that can be followed, but it looks software development, so therefore, why would I even go and look at that?
It reads a lot of software, and even the manifesto, yeah. Okay.
I think what's more interesting to me on this article was the comments that then ensued from this. Like any other thing, it's usually the people then read it and go, yeah, like no wonder it was too hard and all the rest of it. But interesting, there was a bunch of comments about different techniques that perhaps haven't quite made it to the mainstream. So there was one in there which I actually hadn't heard of before called Beyond Budgeting. Have either you guys heard of?
No. There was also the one about the nature as well.
Yeah, that's right. I can't seem to find that one at the moment in front of me. But there's a couple like this that are actually already out there. So Beyond Budgeting is one which Yves Hinuli has talked about. Said that Beyond Budgeting shares a similar mindset with Agile and Lean that does get some attention from management. I think selling Beyond Budgeting might be easier to management, as it's the problem that they're solving is actually their problem. And I think that's the heart of the issue, is that Agile, if you really look at it, and we talked a lot about putting Agile into the business, but ultimately people still look and go, yeah, but that's just software development techniques mapped to the business. And people struggle with that analogy.
But we're not talking about Agile for the business here, we're talking about Agile for managers, aren't we?
True, but it's still for making business decisions. So regardless of whether you're a manager in software development or not, you're still dealing with management decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're still dealing with people, and you're still dealing with budgets, and you're still dealing with all those types of things that managers deal with.
So that's what an agile manager does?
deals with people and budgets.
That's what they should do.
Right, okay, just checking.
Thoughts?
I wonder whether sometimes people don't look wider than what they're doing because we're not providing a lot of scientific evidence around Agile. There's not a lot of metrics from a management and outsider software development perspective for them to look at and go, hey, these guys over here did it. Look at the proof that what they've done. Look at the results of what they've done. So whilst we probably have quite a bit of metrics around the software dev front, there's not a lot wider than that in order to encourage people to have a look at it.
But is that? But in order to get metrics, people have to try it. So is it because it hasn't been widely tried and widely...
Well, we never had metrics at the start of Agile either.
True, but there was something that was compelling to it that then, you know, made people jump onto it. Yeah. Right? It was solving a real problem that software developers had back in, you know, the early 2000s.
And therein lies the crux of the problem, I think. I agree with you. I was just sitting here mulling that over. And, I mean, if you even look at most of the links to Agile and those sorts of things, so these people decide, oh, I'm going to really get into this and have a look at this. A lot of it revolves around software, even if you go to the manifesto.
Yep.
Yeah? It says software. And if there was one change you'd make there, I think that needs to be product to change that word, because it really does zone it back there, and then immediately they go, well, this is some sort of geek fest. And that's the problem. That's the problem we've had to deal with for a very long time, is convincing our business partners that it's more than just software development.
So I think that leads on quite nicely to his second article, which kind of followed up a little bit, which is why can't the C-suite grasp agile management? And essentially what he's talking through is he was talking to a gentleman, Rod Collins, who's the CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program, which is a mouthful. And this guy had actually been to Stoos, and he'd actually started to hear about Agile. If you want to know more about Stoos, we talked about that in an earlier podcast, so go back and have a listen to that. But one of the things that he just saw just by seeing a few people talking about Agile is that there was three fundamental principles that Agile talks about that actually solve or actually have business problems. One is that business, like Agile, has a riveted focus on what customers value and what's most important to them. And you think about that, in Agile software development, we do that because we care about ultimately the product and the business that we're trying to sustain. So it's not a software development thing, it's actually a business thing. Right? And I don't think we do a good enough job of portraying that. The second one is that a preoccupation with group process rather than distributed tasks as in traditional management. So, you know, getting everybody together, working together, as opposed to lots of other areas of businesses, like that single point of failure, or, you know, the one guy over here that does something. And the third one is a recognition that work is fundamentally iterative learning. And he goes on to then talk about, you know, why do senior levels have issue getting their head around this. And he mentions companies like Amazon, Zappos, Google, Starbucks, Wikipedia, that are quite well known for having a different management model. But he says that when you explain this to senior leaders in organisations, they have trouble getting it, in inverted commas. I'm doing inverted commas in the air there.
They can see that, correct?
Yes. In the new management model, power shifts from the notion of being in charge to the notion of being connected. And that's the thing that most people have trouble with, is that they're very comfortable with being in charge, but actually being connected and understanding what's happening on the shop floor is actually quite difficult for them.
So at this point in time, I'd refer you to Upton Sinclair's dictum. Have you heard that before?
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, sorry, Rona. A little bit enough of that language on this podcast. You're going to lose our rating on iTunes.
That's it. It gets clean rating.
Gold.
Upton Sinclair's dictum is, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his job depends on not understanding it. So if people...
Only a man.
Sorry?
Only a man.
Only a man. Apparently, yes. I think Upton wrote it a long time ago. But yeah, ultimately, this shift from being in charge to being connected is a direct threat on the values and beliefs that they hold true. And it's going to be incredibly hard to get people to shift it when their job depends on understanding it.
Yeah.
And look, they don't want to shift. They like being in charge.
That's not just an agile principle. That's a lean principle as well, right? Go look, go see. That's one of the one of the major dictums that they have is that, you know, the guys who are up at the top of
the
tree.
You used dictum. Did you mean to use the word dictum?
Of course I did. It's the new buzzword. See how many times we can get that in.
Yeah. Four so far. Keep going.
Well, we're going to ruin our rating. We might as well do it in style. I mean, yeah, that's the Gemba walk. Get down on the Gemba and see what's going on. Go look, go see. Yeah, get connected.
Indeed. Speaking of dictums.
I know the title for the podcast now, by the way.
Yes, I can see that.
I guess at the end was what Rod's saying is that we have known for 50 years that participative management is far superior to traditional legacy management. We've got a whole discipline, Maslow, McGregor, all those types of people. But he goes, it has had very little impact on organisations. It's changed the style, but it didn't change the substance. And I think about a lot of the managers I see where they go, yeah, we're moving to leadership style, and then all of a sudden they turn around and they, you know, direct something. Or, you know, so it's not really leadership still. It's still very, very management. And what I really like is he says, look, it's ironic, as we watch the substance of the current management shift, especially over the last decade, it's coming from the engineers. The Agile Manifesto was written by software engineers. The new paradigm is being created by engineers like Sergey Brin and Larry Page at Google, Bill Gore at W.L. Gore. It's ironic that as the psychologists and socialists identified what was needed, the engineers are actually getting it done.
Mm.
And I think that's ultimately it. And it comes back, I think, to the metrics that you were talking about before, is that even that's not typically the management thing. If people are just there and be told what to do and do what I do, that doesn't involve, you know, thinking outside the square and going, how can I improve this? How can I measure it? How can I get better? And it takes something a bit special to do that. And they're the companies that ultimately end up being...
I'm just concerned that there's nothing out there that's driving management to change. Like, we all know global financial crisis. They should be just clawing for change right now. They're not. Why? And I wonder whether in 8 years' time, when the whole paradigm and the world economic shift with China and with India finally reaching the same economic conditions of the Western world, if that shift is going to have to be forced at that point in time.
Well, I think there's still too many legacy alternatives at the moment, right? Like you just mentioned it, and we talked last week about, you know, the big providers. It's like at the moment we can still make legacy decisions. We can still ship things offshore. Yeah. We can, you know,
we can still do the short-sighted strategic thinking. We're going to get to a point where we can't anymore.
Yeah.
And people's minds are going to have to shift, or they're going to be dinosaurs.
And I think that is one thing that at least the global financial crisis did, you know, if you look at what happened in America, is that large organisations that were seemingly untoppable got topped over. Hmm. And if you look at then what's emerging out of it is there's a lot of smaller players. I mean, there's still big players in the market, but someone will come back and, you know, take that over in some way, shape or form.
I just feel like in 7 or 8 years' time, the GFC that we've just gone through is just going to be a pittance compared to what's coming.
Oh, I think that's without doubt. I mean, you just got to look at the indicators that are around the world at the moment. You have a look at the European crisis. That's just a tip of the iceberg, and that's just going to continue to happen.
A dictum, if you will.
I couldn't agree with you more, Craig.
Anyway, the last...
speaking of dictums, I just have to take this moment that Craig has to... He's got this sitting
don't,
next
don't
to him.
Don't you go to see my Brad Pitt.
Oh, is it yours, is it?
It's mine. I like
Brad
it
Pitt's
all.
Moneyball. Mm-hmm. There's so a dictum. Anyway, let's continue.
It doesn't say Brad Pitt's Moneyball. It's Brad Pitt's Moneyball.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's missing the apostrophe.
It's a missing...
S.
You see what we deal with, people. Anyway,
to wrap this up, the last article in the series was The Case Against Agile, 10 Perennial Management Objections. So we talked a bit about this is really the excuses that the management have for not wanting to do it. And a lot of these, again, as you read through the comments, people read it and go, well, yeah, that's why Agile doesn't work. Well, actually, these are the things that are stopping Agile from working. So
that's the difference.
So the first one is Agile is only for stars. And I've heard this one quite a lot, and I'm just going to paraphrase.
I've never heard this one.
Well, if you listen to, like, and you've read the Steve Jobs book, for example, where Steve Jobs talks about when he was creating the Macintosh, that, you know, he only wanted to hire A people, and then it went out of his control, and the A people let the B people come in, the B people let the C people come in. And, right? So ultimately, if you, as organisations get bigger, and I've heard the same Kevin Rose talk about Dig in the same way as a company, was that, you know, this idea of, you know, as you get bigger and hiring things come out of your control, you start put up with mediocrity, and, you know, that leads on. So, you know, what he's really saying here is that, well, you can only do agile if you've got stars. But that's pointing to another problem, is that you're putting up with the fact that you don't have stars.
Yes.
Now, I wonder sometimes, people talk about you always need eight people. I think any company can be successful. If you have a bunch of C people working together, they can be stars in their own right.
Yeah.
But C people don't want to work with B people, and, you know, D people don't want to work with A people, and you know, you've got to get the right kind of people working together.
So what are you, a B person?
Near a Y or something, I think.
Y, okay.
Because you just look at me sometimes and you go, why? That's what I think. Anyway, number two, agile doesn't fit our organisational culture. Heard this one before, Tony?
Oh.
Well, this fits for every single implementation of agile, right? Of course it doesn't. It's a cultural change.
And I mean,
what's our favourite thing that we hear from our customers? We're different.
Yes.
Our technology's different. This, you know, and the three of us are in an interesting position because, and I'm not sure if our listeners have heard, but we've actually worked on the agile implementation into a large organisation twice over, and so three times over, and. It's exactly the same thing we heard the first time. It's exactly the same thing we heard the second time. It's exactly the same thing we heard the third time. Guess what, people? It works.
So number three, agile only works for small projects and our projects are big. All right. I think that's a dictum. I'm going for 10 people. I'm at 7. Agile requires co-location and our staff are geographically dispersed. You know,
that is a problem. I must admit, it is harder.
It is not an unconquerable problem.
No, it's not, but it is damn hard.
It is harder.
Yeah, but...
But, you know, life wasn't meant to be easy and all that stuff.
Yeah, if you put effort into it, you can still make that work. Like, you've got to make it feel like it's... Okay, and most people give up, right? They don't put in the right... You know, it's going to cost you money to do that.
Yeah.
Right? And time and all this. But if that's, you know... If you're a star engineer... And I'm not thinking about where we just offshore stuff to, you know, to other countries. But, you know, if you've got a star engineer and they're in another city and they're going to make the difference, then you'll do what you can need to do to make it work.
So you're saying you make that an organisational dictum?
I think so. Ding, number eight. Agile lacks project management processes.
Oh.
Yeah, well, like
rubbish.
Number six, our firm's individual accountability systems don't fit agile. Number seven, agile is just a fad. Maybe, but... it's
a pretty long-winded fad.
It is. Number eight, there are better ideas than agile. It's like, okay.
Possibly there are. Yeah.
And there possibly are, and if there are, let's use them.
Exactly.
And like we said in here, the approaches of beyond budgeting, complexity thinking, lean management, and right shifting are helpful and obviously relate to agile software development, but it's not obvious that they're having any more real success in changing the basic command and control paradigm. In other words...
Completely agree. We're all failing.
So can I point you to the Oath of Non-Allegiance? Yeah?
And there's our Alistair.
There's the Alistair cabin, a little duck in there. That's another one, yum, yum. But seriously... Take the best out of each and make it better.
Make it work.
Yeah. So nothing new here.
Make it a dictum.
Yeah. You know, again, if there's nothing new, a bit like what you said before, right, we're still been failing. And number 10, not a fair comparison.
Oh, really?
So
how fair would you
like? It's really interesting. And what I like about this article is that, and I think I've got a greater appreciation for Steve Denning than perhaps I had from, you know, like he's got a really good grasp on some of this stuff. And I think some of the explanations he gives to each of those in this article are really good. So so just go and have a look at those. We'll put the links in the show notes for you, but have a bit of a read. It's an interesting state of the nation.
Beautiful.
That's pretty much all we've got time for. I noticed you've got a quote there.
Well, that one was one, but I just saw one come through that I can't not talk about. Al Shalloway?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I guess the reason I don't think the original signatories of the Agile Manifesto... Oh, sorry. I guess the reason I don't think the original signatories of the Agile Manifesto don't own Agile is that I was doing Agile in the 90s.
Wasn't that one of the ones we just had in here? There's nothing new. Number nine.
Number nine.
When you say, I was just looking at
number going, nine dictum.
Ding.
Ding.
We got a minute left. You can say dictum. Ah, got it. 10. Right.
Oh, this dictum stuff. We've got to stop this.
11. Right. I'm going to wrap this up before the dictums take over the world. 12. So, any last thoughts, guys? All right. Yeah. Now, one thing we just wanted to finish off with is how long is it? We're 30 something episodes into the
30 odd episodes. Who would have thought?
Yeah, so
that's 30 odd hours.
Yeah, something like that. So
in small rooms.
Yes, and cafes.
Cafes.
So we're at this point where we're going, how can we serve you a little better? So in the coming weeks, we're going to be inviting you, our listeners, to help us create a podcast that suits your needs. So what are we doing well? What aren't we doing well? If you've got some thoughts, pop us to us in the email, which is...
podcast@theagilerevolution.com.
But we'll give you some more details. We'll actually open up a online retrospective in the next few weeks and get your thoughts about how we shape the podcast moving forward. That's about time, so... I guess Evil Revolution for me. You can get me on the email, craig@theagilerevolution.com.
renee@theagilerevolution.com.
Yeah, you can get me there too. tony@theagilerevolution.com.
Evil Revolution.
Evil Revolution.
Evil Revolution. It's a dictum.